Excuse me, everyone. It's the operator. Just need to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And you may begin.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks, Gisela. Welcome all to this, the August 16th Vertical Integration Work Group call. The agenda is in the Adobe room. I forgot to send it by email. My apologies. I'm digging out from a little bit of a flood here at the farm, and I got distracted with some projects this morning. But the agenda is to take a look at Margie's summary of the public comments and make sure that it's ready to go into the report. Take a quick look at the motion that the council will be presented by Stefan, and then continue our conversation about harms. That's sort of it for today. Is there anything that people would like to add to that? Okay. Gisela, why don't you call the roll, and then we'll get underway.
Absolutely. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's Vertical Integration Call, Monday the 16th of August. We have Mike O'Connor, Stephen Mutasami, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Volker Greimann, Jeffrey Eckhouse, Ken Stubbs, Keith Drazik, Jochen Frakes, Paul Diaz, Jeff Newman, Roberto Gaetano, Barry Kolb, Staten Hammock, Avery Doria, Scott Austin, Brian Cute, Alan Greenberg, Amadou Abril, Jean-Christophe Vigne, Tero Mustala, Katrin Olmer, John Nevitt, and from staff we have Margie Milam, Liz Gaster, Amy Satos, Mike Zupka, myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We have apologies today from Ron Andruff. He may be calling, joining a little later. Christina Rosette, Boudoir Chambet, Richard Tyndall has also just joined the call, and if I can please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. I hope I haven't left anyone out. Over to you, Mikey.
Thanks, Gisela. Thanks all for joining on this mid-summer, mid-August day. As I said a minute ago, just three things today on the agenda. I hope everybody's had a chance to read through Margie's summary of the public comments. In a normal working group, what we would be doing is we would go through this in a pretty detailed way, probably over several meetings, and both tune the language of the summary itself and start discussing changes that we might make to the initial report. Given the deadlines that we're under, I'd like to sort of narrow our focus and mostly just make sure that the summary accurately reflects what people thought they said and what they, for those of you who read all the comments, as I did, if you feel like it's an accurate summary of the total. And we'll save the conversation about what the implications are for the initial, really for the final report, for another call, because I think that there are some pretty substantial issues in there that we probably want to take a little bit more time to reflect on and talk about on the list before we start making choices. But our deadline for getting the revised initial report to the council is Wednesday, and so we need to make sure that this document that's on the Adobe screen in front of you is ready to go. And with that, Margie, do you want to sort of lead us through the conversation of this? Do you want me to just manage a queue and take questions for you? How do you want to proceed from here?
I think it's probably best for me to a brief overview. Obviously, I'm not going to read the comments of each section, and then maybe we pause and take questions in each section. How does that sound?
That sounds fine.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I mean, and as a disclaimer indicates, I mean, obviously, this is a summary, and as Mikey indicated, we really need to have each of you read the comments themselves to see what they said, because it's often difficult to prepare a summary, especially in a short amount of time. And I apologize to anyone whom we may have misstated or left, you know, or not included all of their pertinent points. So essentially, we received 22 contributions to the public comment forum. I've listed them on the first page. So it represents a broad spectrum of interest, including several stakeholder group statements and constituency statements. And those are attached in their entirety at the end of the summaries in Annex A. And so if we had more time, Mikey's exactly right, we would be going item by item and saying, you know, yes, we want to amend the report, and this is how, and we would go through each statement, but we just don't have the time to do that. So I recommend that you do that when you have time after this call. What I tried to do in the very introduction was make some observations based upon my review of the public comments. And there's some bullet points there where I talk about observations that I've made by reading the comments in the public comment forum. And I think perhaps that's a good place to discuss those issues with this group. Mikey, does that sound right? A good way to proceed?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. So my first observation is there are many commenters that indicated that ICANN needs to quickly resolve this issue of vertical separation. And I've highlighted some of the statements in the following sections, but you can hear the needs to get this done quickly. There's also many commenters that indicated that there's just no consensus likely to come from the VI working group in favor of any of the substantive models in the initial report. And so there wasn't, in looking at the comments, there wasn't a trend favoring one model over the other. I think the comments reflect the diversity that we've all identified in this working group. The other thing that I think stood out was that there was no support for the models reflected in the Nairobi Board Resolution and BAG 4. I didn't see a comment that said those resolution position or the DAG version 4 was acceptable as is. And so I thought that was useful to highlight. There did seem to be general support for the key principles in the initial report. So where we had identified certain principles, the theme of the comments seemed to be supportive of those principles, specifically that certain new TLDs may be unnecessarily impacted by the restrictions on cross-ownership or control. A process should be adopted that would allow exceptions. There seems to be support for the exploration of single registrant, single user TLDs. And there seems to be this recognition of the enhanced need for compliance efforts and a detailed compliance plan to enforce any of the restrictions that may be adopted by ICANN. The other theme that seemed to be pretty prevalent in the comments that addressed this was there seemed to be a concern about the involvement of any model that required involvement of a national competition authority. And the theme seemed to be that national competition authorities don't have experience with the domain name marketplace, and it just didn't seem practical to incorporate that step in a model adopted by ICANN. So those are kind of my general observations. I think I'll pause here to see if there are any questions.
We've got a couple, I think. Jeff, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Marge. This is a great document. My only comment is that there were some people, and I know Newstar is one of them, that submitted comments to vertical integration during the DAG process as opposed to here, and I guess they thought that maybe those comments, even though they didn't submit it to this forum, would still make it in as they relate kind of to the same stuff. So is there any collaboration, Margie, with you and whoever's doing the comments for the DAG on this issue to maybe include them in the same report?
To answer your question, I did not look at the comments to the draft applicant guidebook version 4. We had a short amount of time to do this. If the consensus of the group is that I should do that, I'd be happy to take some time after this call take a look at them and include them in here. But typically we don't do that as a practice. I see that it may be relevant in this case. So, you know, if that's the consensus of the group, I'd be happy to do that.
I'm wondering if there's a way that folks – Jeff, would there be a way that you could send a copy of that to Margie and highlight the section so she didn't have to churn through them all?
I could do that, and that's not a problem, but that I think just benefits the people who are on this call that know. My concern is about the others that aren't on this call, because I did talk to a few other people that were just assuming that the comments would be taken into consideration. I think because the deadlines are so close to each other.
Yeah. The thing that I'm mindful of is our own deadline, which is Wednesday, and I want to make sure that we don't set Margie on a task that she cannot complete in time for our deadline. So could we structure it like this, that we ask Margie to look at it, but if she has to choose between getting through all of those and making our deadline, that she makes our deadline? I would hate to be in a situation where we miss that deadline, because then suddenly a lot of bad things happen. Would that be okay with you, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. The issue is that all these things are going to end up at the board, and I would just hate for the board to consider the comments by this working group in isolation from the comments that were submitted to what ICANN had proposed.
How about this for an additional thing? Why don't we add a note to this document that says precisely that, that says these are the comments that we received directly for vertical integration, and then we'll fold in the ones that Margie can find in a reasonable amount of time, but then have a statement that says, in addition, please review the appropriate section of the comments to the DAG, as there is considerable overlap in that topic, so that people are alerted to do that. Maybe that's another hedge that we could put in.
Just say that those comments are incorporated into this public comment period or something like that.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea. Margie, is that going to put you in a pickle?
No, I think that's a reasonable approach. I'll look at them and see how big the task is. At a minimum, we'll do make the disclaimer or the reference to the others and incorporate them, by reference. So at least there's a reference to it.
Yeah. Okay. That seems like a good point. And you know, Jeff, it would be. Well, I don't know if this is really your job, but I hadn't even thought about looking at the DAG comments. If somebody could point the rest of us via the list at the right part of the DAG comments, I should probably read those too. I hadn't even thought about it.
Well, it's any comments at reference section, was it 2.8 or 2.9? I can't remember what it was in the new.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good catch. Thanks, Jeff. Ken, you're next.
Thanks, Mike. I have a question about one of the conclusions that was reached, Margie, in the fourth bullet point there, and that the first item that's mentioned, certain new GTLDs likely to be applied for in the first round may be unnecessarily impacted by restrictions. To me, that sounds like a conclusion that the impact is really not necessary. I think maybe that's your read of the comments that were made. I think there's clearly going to be an impact by restrictions, but whether or not that impact is necessary is really a conclusion that I don't think has been reached yet.
I think in Margie's defense, that may be language out of our report, Ken.
Mikey, that's correct. This is Margie. I was just referring back to our report. I wasn't making that conclusion without, you know, reference to that.
Yeah, that's the preamble to the principles section of our report. I think
okay.
I think that might have come from Tim's original draft, but I'm not sure. Anyway, I don't think that it's Margie's.
Okay, well, I wasn't certain, but it was. I honestly don't recall that word used, but I believe that it may have been. And
yeah,
just,
I think that's where it came from. Okay, Amadeo, you're next.
Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yep, can hear you fine.
I think that I just lowered my hand. Say that instead of putting perhaps all the comments at the very least regarding Jeff Newman's point, a reference to the comments made in the different modules, because probably some people send that to the intro, to the whole forum, or to the Model 2 forum. So at least a reference to the three different places where these comments were made should be made. But, you know, that's from the previous discussion.
Yeah, okay. But it's a good point that we should, when we make the reference, let's make sure that we point at the right places in the DAG so that people don't accidentally miss them. I think that's a good thought. Okay, Margie, I think back to you.
Okay. So I'm just going to scan through the rest of the comments and see if there's something I can point out that's relevant for us to talk about. There are some general comments in Section 4. We did talk about the issue of resolving the issue quickly. I'm in page 3 of the document. On the issue of that consensus is not likely to be reached, there was a comment from Key Systems that essentially was concerned that that if consensus wasn't reached, then essentially because the it's the first round of applications, it's the defining round, that you may be effectively shutting out applicants in subsequent rounds. So I thought that was an interesting observation that I wanted to share with the group.
Let me break in, Margie, and I think Scott's got a question about something you just went over. Scott, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Mikey. Actually, it was after Ken made that comment, I decided to look a little closer at, and just wanted to raise the bullet points that follow the unnecessarily line. And again, if these are just taken from our own words, then there's no reason to quibble, I guess. But I know we had some discussion on this list or on the working group about the word exception, as in exception to what? And I'm just wondering if we ought to make the reference to, you know, exceptions to restrictions on cross-ownership or control, which is in the prior bullet point. Just, again, to say exception in the in a vacuum, it seems to me, doesn't...
Yeah, no, I think that's a good catch. I think that's easy to fold in, right, March?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's right. It's sometimes hard to summarize and... accurately reflect everything, so I think that's a reasonable clarification.
Yeah, well, and I do want to highlight the speed with which you had to do this too.
No, I think it's terrific. I just like I said, I was just trying to see if to put it in perspective, to at least or context to note that that's what the exception is.
Yeah,
to.
Yeah. No, and I think it's good to have, you know, people catching stuff like that, because many eyes make better documents. Terrific. Thanks, Scott. Okay, back to you, Margie.
Sure. And with respect to that topic, the first one, first principle about certain new TLDs likely to be unnecessarily impacted, there were two kinds of categories that were highlighted in the comments by separate commenters. One was the special consideration for linguistic and cultural TLDs, and from Punk Kat talked about that, Nacho Amados, and also there was also reference from, I believe it was Key Systems and Michaela also talked about similar concepts. So when we're talking about different CLDs that may have special consideration, that was one category. The other category was raised by Deborah Hughes of the Red Cross regarding the needs of nonprofit organizations. And so I tried to pick out parts of her comments that highlighted the concerns of nonprofit organizations from her perspective. Any questions regarding those comments? Okay, I think we're good. With regard to the principal request that a process should be adopted to request exceptions and have them be considered on a case-by-case basis, there were a number of comments in that category, both from the business and also I did think it was interesting that that Deborah Hughes from the Red Cross actually provided some a clarity on what she suggested the exceptions procedure could look at. She had a four-part description of what the exceptions process could follow. One of her suggestions, which was also raised by another commenter, was that if there is an exceptions procedure, it should be at no additional cost to the applicant. So that was one of her suggestions. And then I think it'd be useful for this group to look at the procedure that she suggested when we have time. Any questions about that comment, that set of comments? Okay, and then the next item is on page 8, item D, the principle that single registrant, single user TLDs should be explored further. I think there's a number of comments that supported that it should be looked at further. Concerns about defining it very tightly to avoid gaming, I think that principle came out both in the ISP constituency statement and the comments of Melbourne IT. So that seemed to be a running theme that if that was to be explored, it would have to be very tightly defined. Any questions regarding that comment? Okay. And then there was also a fair amount of comments supporting the principles that were in our initial report regarding the need for enhanced compliance and a detailed compliance plan. So that certainly was something that was supported by many comments. And then with regard to the next topic, which is the actual proposals, I think the thing I wanted to highlight most was the comments of the registry stakeholder group that was submitted by David Maher. He wanted to point out on behalf of the registry stakeholder group that a couple principles. One was that although no proposal had consensus, if you start looking at themes across various proposals, there seems to be that the proposals that prohibit or restrict vertical integration seem to have broader combined support than proposals that would permit unrestricted vertical integration. So he's kind of they were looking at kind of the general principles across these various proposals. There seems to be strong support for at least from the perspective of the registry stakeholder group that for continuing the 15% ownership cap and for imposing a restriction on a vertically integrated registry and registrar from selling it in its own TLD, while there seemed to be less support for allowing 100% cross-ownership and unrestricted vertical integration. And so I don't know if there's anyone from the registry stakeholder group that would like to comment on this, but I'm just pointing out that they looked at these proposals on a kind of a more broad base to see what kind of principles emerged. Looks like we have a question from Jeff.
Yeah, thanks. And this question is actually also towards any member of the registry stakeholder group because I wasn't sure when it was saying it is important to note that when they were discussing about their strong support and there's different levels of support, was that an analysis of the VI working group as a whole, or was that of the registry stakeholder group the levels of support and the discussions there. I wasn't sure which one it was referring to on the level of support, so maybe if somebody could clarify that from the registry stakeholder group.
Jeff, is that you that's stepping up to clarify?
Actually, I forgot Brian's on, so I'll defer to Brian.
Okay, Brian. Brian, you may be muted at this point.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, it's all good.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Jeff. You didn't have to do that. And if I go sideways on the explanation, please jump in. I think, simply put, it was a registry stakeholder group looking at the results of the polling in part and of the supporters of the respective proposals. And if you look at the proposals that call for restrictions as a category and look at the numeric support for those, that's what the statement is based on, that view of the proposals and the poll results.
Thanks, Brian. Jeff Eckhouse, does that clear up your question for you?
So basically there, it's an analysis. It's the registry stakeholder group take on the polls that were done. I just wanted to be clear of that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Okay, Brian, I think you can take your hand down so you don't confuse me, and then Margie, back to you.
Sure. The other thing that I thought was interesting in the registry stakeholder group comment was that they wanted to highlight that polls that show support for an atom or molecule without further context may be incomplete or misleading. There was a recommendation to the working group that as we move to a final report, that we should refrain from representing molecules or atoms in a manner that creates a false impression of consensus where it may not exist. Any comments on that? Okay. The various comments on the proposals. I think that probably would take some time. What I did do was lump for each category observations that I could identify with respect to those proposals so you could get a flavor for the types of comments that were made by the commenters. I'm just scanning through now, so I'm just going through to the next category, which would be the one thing I did, and I mentioned this before, was I did those specifically address the issue of draft applicant guidebook 4 and the board Nairobi resolution because there seems to be a theme throughout the comments about that those proposals not being acceptable. And then at the very end of that section, this is page 15, I believe, in category G, there were additional proposals suggested for the VI working group's consideration. There's a VeriSign proposal that's represented in the summary, and I don't know if, Keith, you would like to kind of describe it. And then there was also the recommendation from Key Systems, from Michaela and EuroDNS to include a reference to the open registrar proposal, and if any of you are on the call right now, you want to explain that further, because that proposal was not reflected in the initial report.
Margie, this may fall in the definitely something to consider later category, but we may not want to go through the details of the proposals right now. Michaela? Go ahead.
Since I never speak on these calls, I thought I'd break with tradition.
All right, then.
Just with respect to the reference on the open registrar proposal, I believe that there was some kind of crosswires with respect to getting that included in the report. So in consultation with Mikey, it was decided that the best way to get a reference in at this juncture was to include it via the public comments, which Volker did, and then I referenced and possibly JC might have referenced it as well. I'm not too sure about anybody else. That's basically what happened.
Thanks, Michaela. I totally forgot about that.
Mikey, if I may comment, this is Margie. The initial report doesn't reference it, that I believe, and in the comments, I didn't include the text of the Open Registrar proposal because it was about 5 pages long. The only thing that I actually attached verbatim was the constituency statements and the stakeholder group statements. So if we don't include it in the summary and it's not in the initial report, then someone who's looking through those documents won't be able to get to the details of the Open Registrar proposal. I could link it to at least what's on our wiki page, but that is a question whether you want to actually incorporate some summary of the Open Registrar proposal in the report.
I think I'd like to do is figure out a way to get the whole text of both the VeriSign and Open Registrar proposal into this somehow, whatever makes the most sense. The reason that we didn't put them in the initial report is because we didn't poll on them. And in fact, we really have that issue with all of the proposals that we didn't poll on. So that includes the initial free trade proposal by Shiva, some of the earlier drafts of CAM, et cetera. And so maybe the thing to do is refer to the proposals pages in the wiki so that people can get to those texts. I'm sort of open to ideas here, people. But there is sort of a fairness thing. I don't want to unnecessarily exclude other proposals from this link. So my initial thought would be to have a link in there to a place where people can see all the proposals. And I think that there's a page on the wiki that does that so that people can get to the full text if they want it. What do people think of that? Jeff Newman and Alan. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, I think and Keith is on the phone, so maybe he can speak, but I think the VeriSign, what I read in the comment, I could be wrong, it's just restating what it submitted on July, in July to the working group. I don't think it's a new proposal.
Yeah, it's not really a proposal.
I haven't read Michaeli, your submission or that submission, the Open Registrar, but my feeling is, again, it's probably just a proposal that was already submitted to the working group, although not included in the report.
This is Keith, and that's correct. I mean, what we submitted as public comments was nothing different than what we submitted previously to the working group list. However, there were a couple of paragraphs added to help frame it in the context of where the working group is today. For example, we encouraged the working group to, you know, continue to work towards some sort of compromise. We encourage the working group to try to include, you know, keep working on the list of harms and to include the list of harms. So Jeff's correct in that it wasn't a new standalone proposal per se, but there was some additional context and framing of of the position.
Okay, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to caution against putting links into the wiki. Wiki references are not all that stable to begin with, and ICANN's in the midst of changing to a new wiki where the content will be preserved, but the addressing, I'm sure, will not be. So from an archival and historical point of view, a pointer to the wiki probably has no value at all.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's leave this as a puzzle for Margie to figure out, Margie and Mikey. I don't want to soak up a whole lot of time on the call, but we'll acknowledge that it would be nice to get links to all of the original proposals in here somehow and figure out the best way to do that. How about that?
Okay.
I'm not hearing howls of protest, so let's figure that out. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm out of line, so I cannot raise my hand.
No
just
worries.
Just a point of clarification, because I know Volker and myself did attach our proposal to our comments. But I was wondering actually what the board would use. Do they usually limit themselves to the report and now this is so good that they could do just that? Or would they actually go to each comment and then they may see the proposal itself because it's attached to both my comments and Volker's?
Hang on a minute, JC, while I see if we can figure out what the noise on the line was. That's the noise, whatever that noise is. Lori, can you kind of keep an eye out for that one and see what's up with that? In answer to that, I'm going to defer to the senior co-chair of the Vertical Integration Working Group, who knows how the board works a lot better than me. Roberto, you want to take a swing at JC's question on what the board will actually...
I didn't get the question, in fact.
JC, do you want to run through that again? There was an awful lot of noise on the line when you were talking.
Okay, the question is, does the board usually rely solely on the report, or will they go through the whole list and therefore see our proposal because it's attached to my comments and Volker's? Presumably, I mean, the question is, do we need to reference the proposal, or can we expect the board to look at the proposal by itself because it's in both our comments?
The board, in principle, goes through the whole documentation. However, the board relies very much on the summary and on the papers that are prepared by staff to highlight the different points. In other words, the issue is to make sure that when the staff prepares the recommendation and the paper for the board, that those references are put in. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does, thank you. But then, question maybe to Margie is there an issue in annexing each proposal to the report? Is there a limit in length, or?
No, I think it's in fact to put things as an annex is a good thing, because they are there. So at least it is in the documentation that that is presented to the board. I also have to say that in my experience on the board, not all the directors read the whole documentation. But that's a different story. That's something that that we can't do anything about. Hello?
Okay, thanks. Yeah, thanks for this. Margie, what do you think? Is it possible to annex them, or?
I don't really know what the format of the board report is going to look like. That's typically not done, at least my end. So let me look into it and see what I can find.
All right, thanks.
Okay, I see nothing else in the queue. Margie, carry on.
Okay, then just the final points before we subject. In the observations on the domain name market and competition, this is section 7, there were a fair amount of references to the to asking the working group to look at the experience of ccTLDs. That theme seemed to come across in many of the comments, that ccTLDs, some of them are integrated, some of them allow registrars to go direct. Registries to go direct, and that experience might be helpful in determining, the types of harms that might come up in the model that might be adopted for new gTLDs. So that was one idea. The other thing, there was
I guess we have a question from Scott Austin.
Scott, you want to go ahead? You're muted, maybe.
I'm here, but I was just trying to collect my thoughts because a lot of things have gone on since as she was going through these, and I'm trying to read some of the summary at the same time. There are a couple of things that I thought were really very interesting that were raised, and I'd just like to hear from the community about the comments. And one is there was a miscellaneous comments under Roman 8, essentially saying that people were kind of, or there were entities out there that were registered, or sorry, accredited as registrars, but yet were not necessarily functioning as a registrar. And I wonder if our report needs to deal with that. I didn't realize that that could essentially happen. It's sort of like, you know, being on inactive status as a lawyer or something. And I guess the question is, should that be covered so that someone isn't swept up in a limitation that they're unsuspecting, you know, they're not suspecting of? And I just wondered if that was something that we need to deal with in our specific policy.
This is another one of those ones that I think falls in the much deeper discussion that we're going to have as a working group about all of these comments. You know, I think it's certainly a valid point. It's not one that we need to address right now.
Okay. Well, the other thing that goes along with it maybe is also the reference in some of the comments about CCTLDs already having vertical integration or a form of it, and it being tolerated if not preferred. And I guess that the question there is, does that show a model of vertical integration that should be again viewed as either an exception or a model that may work to reach consensus or some consensus among the group? Those were just my two points.
Yeah, I think they're both great points, and for sure we're going to circle back around, I think, through this whole list and pick up points like that in our, you know, in the weeks to come. Right now, what I'm mostly focused on is making sure that this is accurate so that we can put it in the revised initial report. But we just don't have time to digest the implications of all this right now. We've got to get all this done by Wednesday. And so all those conversations, I think, have to wait until we've got a little bit more time to digest stuff. Jeff Eckhouse, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to just give me a second. I just wanted to respond to Scott and say to the group about, you know, what that is about registrars who are, I'm going to use quotes, who are not acting as registrars. All that really is, for example, and I know who this comment refers to and what it's about, so I can have some insight, is just there are people who are ICANN accredited registrars who just do not sell names to the public. These are people who have their registrations, their ICANN, they do it for their domain registrations because some of them own very large portfolios of domain names, and it is more cost efficient for them to hold their registration, and they feel safer than, you know, of owning it themselves. So that is why they're not actively selling to the public. They don't offer their services to the public. They do offer the services that are required in their RAA, such as providing who is and the other information, but they do not sell out to the public. So that is what those people are saying who act as registrars. That's what they do. It's mostly people who own their own large portfolios of domain names, or there are companies such as, you know, Microsoft or Google that have their registrars, ICANN accredited registrars, but they don't sell domains through their own accreditation. They use it for other sources of information.
Thanks, Jeff. I think with that, back to you, Margie.
Sure, and then I'll wrap up with a discussion of the comments on the next steps. Two comments talked about the fact that even though we may not be able to reach consensus prior to the launch of the first round, that it's still worthwhile to keep, you know, trying to reach a compromise and consensus for future rounds, with the idea being that we don't want to have further delays, and so it doesn't mean that the work isn't important or shouldn't be done. It's just that it may not necessarily affect the first round of applications. The other comments that came were related to the list of harms. There were several comments that encouraged the working group to develop the list of harms for the next version of the initial report. Although there were concerns that the list of harms may not have any basis in fact, that it might just be potential harms without reference to the likelihood of effects. And with that, I think that concludes at least my overview of the summary.
Thanks again, Margie, for turning out a pretty big, pretty complex document on almost no time budget whatsoever. I think this is people's sort of last chance to stick up your hand and say, no, this is no good, because otherwise I think what Margie and I will do is add a paragraph or two to the initial report that basically just introduces this summary of the public comments and attach it as an appendix and submit it on Wednesday. So last chance to throw your body on the tracks, but I think this is an amazingly good piece of work, and I agree with all the folks who've brought up points that, you know, there's some really interesting discussion issues here that we need to dig into, but this isn't the day to do it. Today we just need to get these documents stitched into our initial report. Okay, I'm not seeing any bodies flying across railroad tracks, so we'll consider this a go. I appreciate everybody taking a look at it and the comments we got. Margie, could we quickly take a look at the resolution that we're going to use at the council meeting to introduce this into the record and pass it along to the board? I circulated this to the list late last week and asked folks to give it a quick read. I think it's pretty straightforward, but as with anything else in the group, I like to have you all see it and see if there's anything that we need to catch or tweak in here. I'm not going to read it. I just want to put it in front of you. This is sort of your last chance to take a look at it. Margie has her hand up and probably has stuff to tell us about this. Go ahead, Margie.
Sure, since I drafted it, what this does is, because I didn't assume that we were going to have any recommendations in the report, the council motion does not approve of the recommendations in the report. All it does is forward the report to the board. So I just wanted to clarify that, because I didn't, you know, if it was going to turn out that we were going to actually have concrete recommendations in the initial report, we could have rewritten this to have the GNSO Council approve of those recommendations, but I wasn't sure that that was likely, so that's why it's drafted the way that you see.
Thanks a lot. Amadeo, go ahead.
Okay, so my point was related to what Marjorie just said. In fact, what I miss here is a reference that there are not actual recommendations. I mean, if you read this resolution, you understand nothing.
Yeah.
We are being thanked for our hard work and, you know, achieving not exactly what was our duty. So I think that somewhere I should say, well, this, you know, given the fact there are not concrete resolutions or recommendations, the GNSO Council agrees to forward the interim report or something like that. But at least somewhere should be explicit there are no concrete recommendations.
Margie, any thoughts on that?
That's right. I think that's consistent with what we were saying. And so if you look at the motion, there's some bracketed language. I would take out that language because I put in as a placeholder in the event that there were specific policy recommendations. So we might want to put in the whereas clause something that says that, you know, recognizing that although there were no recommendations that achieved a consensus, we're still nevertheless forwarding the report to the board.
I'm just saying that to be clear, because sometimes, you know, I find myself looking back 3 years ago to what the resolution was, and you expect from the resolution to understand something, right? And if 3 years from now we read this resolution, it's absolutely not clear what happened here and what this interim report. So at least I would appreciate making clear there's no concrete recommendation yet.
That makes sense to me, too. Margie, any trouble with that idea?
No.
Okay. Jeff? Jeff Newman 2, the sequel.
Yeah, I don't know where the 2 came from. I didn't...
I just think you like it. Come on.
Okay, so this is going to be a comment in my role as serving on the PDP work team as opposed to being a registry. But I got to say that this resolution sets an awful precedent for PDPs going forward. There is no mechanism to forward a initial report to the ICANN board of directors, and it seems like a really bad precedent. Why do they even need a resolution from the council to move it to the board? Can't the board just consider it on their own without a council resolution? I'm not wording this very well, but it seems like such a circumvention around the policy development process. And as a registry, I am extremely concerned of the precedent this may take in the future as a contracted party. If there's a PDP in the future where there are interests on the council that want to forward initial reports to the board for their consideration without going through the full ICANN policy development process. I do not think at all this is something the GNSO should do, and I'll certainly voice the concern to my reps to vote no on that, not because I don't want the board reading it, but we should not be endorsing this kind of ad hoc policymaking process at all.
Margie, you're our sort of Margie and Roberto, you guys are our resident experts on GNSO board connections. What's your take on these on this point that Jeff's raising?
The thing that Jeff is raising, I agree with him in principle. I just need to point out that I don't believe the bylaws prohibit this from happening from the GNSO Council. There's nothing that says they can't do it, but I certainly hear his comments and think that they are something we should deal with in developing the new PDP process.
Roberto, you got any thoughts about this?
Well, I can just go by analogy, because I don't have direct experience about things that were going through the GNSO Council. But when we had working groups that were chartered by a committee of the board, the results for instance, let's take the GNSO review and the GNSO improvement, the working groups were set by a committee of the board, by the Structural Improvement Committee. And in fact, when the working group had recommendations and things to present to the board, they were going through the committee of the board, the Structural Improvement Committee, who was just receiving this and passing it over to the board, saying, okay, the working group has worked out this and that, and we think that the process has been followed, and therefore we forward the conclusions to the board. In other words, the Structural Improvement Committee and any other committee of the board was not getting into the matter of
the recommendation, which means that they are not changing the contents, but we're somehow certifying that the working group was properly staffed, that all the points of view were listened to, and all these kind of things. So it was kind of a formal endorsement, but not not getting into the substance. So I was kind of assuming that in the in this case, the process was going to be similar, going through the the GNSO. So I found it pretty natural that the GNSO has to go with a motion like the one that was worded.
Thanks, Roberto. Let's see. Lots of. Let me circle. Yikes. Amadeo, are you commenting on this too? If you are, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So regarding what has been said, I agree somehow with everybody. But I think that this is the GNSO Council decision to make what to do with this. I think that they need to somehow go back to the board and say something about what happened in this working group. To me, as I said, the most important part is, unfortunately, our, let's say, at the very least, partial failure, which is we don't have recommendations. And this is what needs to be communicated to the board. No recommendations with this working group as of today. So no recommendations from the GNSO as such. Now, whether they choose to forward the interim report or not to the board, I am more neutral on that. I think it is for the GNSO to decide what to do. I share some of the concerns on Jeff's side. On the other hand, as a former board member, I always prefer to be officially sent more information than less, and to have an official way, not just going through and you know, summary way, not just going through the mailing list archive to see what had happened in this or that working group when you know no recommendations came. As Roberto said, the process and the different ideas there still have some value. But indeed, the board will need to deal with the lack of output before, and then, you know, probably the interim report will be just a discussion material. But at the end of the day, I think it's the GNSO Council that needs to decide what to do with the interim report itself.
Okay. Avery.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I think, first of all, in relation to the PDP, you know, we've had lots of discussions, and there's been lots of discussion of the gray area between PDPs that affect existing contracts versus PDPs that are recommendations on some other issue regarding PLDs. And I know that Jeff has said and has written the PDP is a PDP is a PDP, and yet we've all recognized that there are some differences in those, too. Moreover, this is not a culmination of the PDP. The PDP started before the board asked the question, and the PDP will continue. However, the board did make a statement, did say that they wanted a report. And so for the GNSO to decide or not decide that, given that there is this deadline of a meeting, that they are going to report on the status, and the status is there is this, there are those comments, there is that, whatever it is that the council is going to say. It seems a completely appropriate action for them to take. You know, PDP, nothing in a PDP requires that there be no intermediate report. And, you know, nothing says they are a monolithic thing, that until you get to the end of it, no information need be given to the board. And so, you know, the sort of notion that the board has a decision point or a consideration or a discussion point, whatever it is they're going to do, they're going to do. And, you know, the GNSO, when asked a question, it seems reasonable for them to respond with their status. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Brian.
Yeah, it's a question for Jeff. Jeff, just help me understand a little more clearly what your specific concern is. I share with you, I think, the concern that the council in this particular PDP not in any way involve itself in the policymaking, that it takes the work of the working group through the process and if it iterated to the end of the process, take a final report with recommendations up. But is your specific concern that this creates a mechanism of referral of an interim report that doesn't exist, and that by allowing that mechanism of referral, you might be opening the door to the council engaging in substantive policymaking? I just want to understand your explicit concern.
Jeff's been a good scout and put himself at the end of the list, but Alan, with your permission, I'm going to jump him forward in the queue.
Sure.
Thanks.
Yeah,
Jeff,
I think, Brian, you're absolutely right. I think this now introduces a mechanism for the council to conduct policy development at its level without waiting for the final outcomes of a working group. I think if this resolution, I have no objection to the board reading or being given a copy of the interim report, as they can get it online anyway. But the fact here is the way it's worded, the GNSO Council hereby agrees to forward the report for its review and consideration. I don't think we, as a working group or as a council, we should not be endorsing that the board should be considering this report as some sort of indication of policy development that may ultimately come from as an outcome of the working group process. If we just want to resolve and say, not even a resolution, just kind of an informal thing to say, here, board, here's the interim report that these guys produced, period. To ask that the board consider it is actually asking the board to take action on something that is not yet complete. And the board may do that on its own, but I don't think the council should be resolving asking the board to take some sort of action based upon it. And I, you know, Roberto had brought up the fact of the board creating committees and those committees can present reports to the board. Yeah, absolutely they could. They didn't do that here. They could have, but they didn't. You know, the board created an IRT that people hated, but putting aside the fact that people hated it, the board created it, the IRT reported to the board. Here, it is a policy development process that the board has decided to latch on to, and I think it sets extremely bad precedent, and it basically gives the council some ammunition in the future if it really wants a policy to go up to the board quicker than a working group has done all the bottom-up policy development. This will give the council that kind of avenue to make a recommendation, which I don't think they have the authority to do, especially in the revised structure that Roberto was so kind to help us with the new structure that's in place. So I do think it sets awful precedent. I do think that if the council wants to forward the report, I don't care. I guess it could do that. I don't think it should be in a formal motion. And then my question at the council level, not here, would be, well, how does the council have to approve it? Is it a majority to just forward it onto the board? Is it a supermajority? How does it forward it on? I mean, there's a lot of other kind of questions that get raised that we don't have to deal with here, but our council reps are going to have to deal with. Anyway, I think it should not be a GNSO council resolution at all. If it is, it should just simply state, here's the status, and we're reporting to the board on what the status is.
I'm going to jump the queue for a – no, I won't. Alan, go ahead, and then, Margie, I want to ask you a question about what Jeff just said.
Yeah, I would generally support what Jeff's concern is, but in this case I think it's overreacting. If this was an irregular initial report which had draft recommendations in it and the GNSO were to forward to the board or even worse, forward to the board with its endorsement, I think that would be deadly, and I think that would be inappropriate. Given that there are no recommendations here, I see it less as a problem. Perhaps Jeff's concern can be addressed without changing anything by simply stopping the second resolved after the ICANN board. Now, the ICANN board can decide to review it at its September board retreat or not, but the GNSO doesn't have to instruct them to do this, and the GNSO's instruction isn't worth anything anyway. So just dropping it at the end of the word board may well, the second resolved, may well address the details of the concern, although I'm not overall concerned at all because there are no recommendations.
Jeff, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. From a PDP perspective, I would just like to see what I don't see in here in this resolution is that this is a work in progress. I mean, it may be implied, but I'm not. It doesn't say in here that this is a work in progress and that the group is still working on it and, you know, may have additional updates at a later period of time. It doesn't seem to indicate that. Even though it says it's a revised initial report, there's no indication of what the ongoing work is, and I think that should be reflected as well.
And replace that clause with as a work in progress or as a update of a work in progress.
If this is just a status report, I'm great with that and attaching it to a status report. If this is anything that purports to be more than what it is, that's where I sort of have difficulty. And, again, I apologize for bringing PDP discussions up on this call, but I do think that this could set a precedent for future items where contracted parties will care a lot more.
Well, I think this is actually a pretty reasonable conversation. Ken, I'll get to you in a second, but Margie, when you drafted this, I mean, if we took Alan's suggestion and we said in the second resolve that the Geonosco Council hereby agrees to forward the revised initial report to the ICANN board, period, when you were drafting the revised and consideration part of that, was that a big deal in your mind? Would this materially change your resolution if we chopped that off?
It's Margie. I was just writing this at the request of the counselors. Typically staff doesn't, you know, it's not a staff motion. It's a GNSF counselor motion.
Yeah.
And when I drafted it, you know, to be helpful, I didn't know where we were going to end up on the initial report. So it's really up to the whatever counselor makes that recommendation. I think it's certainly, these are all reasonable, revisions to the motion, but it's up to a counselor.
So this is a conversation that partly we need to have with Stefan, because I think he's indicated on the list anyway that he's going to be submitting the motion. With that, I'll take it to Ken. Oh, you may be on mute, Ken.
Thanks. Yeah.
There you go.
Jeff used the term precedent at the very end, and that was what I was concerned about. I support both Alan and Jeff's comments, and I think we really need to add a little bit of clarity, because I don't want to have a precedent in a process that was never intended to be there. Thanks.
Yeah. No, I think that I agree as well. I think there are two things that we want to accomplish. One, we want to tone down the review and consideration language. And another is that we sort of want to increase the emphasis that this is an interim report. It's a snapshot of a process that's not yet finished. Those are the two things that I've come away from this with. Roberto, go ahead.
Yeah, just another bit of information. To the best of my knowledge, at the retreat, the board will not pass a resolution related to the work of the working group, or generally speaking about the GTSD, because the board doesn't make resolutions at the retreat. So I think that there's another reason for deleting that part of the sentence that says, for its review and consideration at its September 24th, 25th board retreat, because that's we don't need to follow an official endorsement procedure for presenting documents to the retreat.
Okay, so I think we're pretty much all in agreement here. With the will of the group, Margie and I will take a pass through this later today and tomorrow and try and accomplish those two things. Because I think Amadeo's point, Amadeo, just to check, your primary point is to clarify this interim snapshot of a process that's still underway, correct?
My primary point is that we shouldn't have a resolution saying that we're sending something, which is normally a policy recommendation, when it's not. So my primary point is clarifying that here there are no policy recommendations.
Yeah, right, okay. Thanks for clarifying that. Let Margie and me take a pass at that, if it's okay with you all. I think we can, and I need to visit with Stefan as well, because he's the one who's actually going to carry this motion. But if we can accomplish that, are there any other issues that people have with this? Okay, I think we're pretty much in agreement that that's the way we ought to go. I haven't been following the chat, so if there's something that's important that's gone by in the chat, please give me a heads up on that. Okay, that's it for the initial report and the motion. It's quarter after the hour. We have an interesting opportunity that's come up. And that is that the GNSO Council has moved its next meeting, not the August 26th meeting, but the one in September, forward a week, which gives us one more council meeting that we could use to inject one last revision into this report if we want to. And I think that revision would primarily be the list of harms. And so the question to you all in this last 15 minutes is whether we think we can get that done and whether we think that's a good idea. I don't think that we've got enough time to do much except sort of steer the conversation about harms. I don't think we can actually dig into the meat of it. But I would like to get a sense from you all about whether we think this is a good thing to try and drive to ground and whether we think we can get it done in time. You know, basically what it gives us is another couple of weeks to, I haven't actually worked the dates backwards, but intuitively I think we've got another couple of calls before we would have to be at closure on harms, or at least in addition to the initial report. And so I wanted to put that to you all and just see what you thought. I know that there's been, you know, in the comments there was a call to try and drive some of that in. There's also been interest expressed to me and Roberto through other channels to see some of that stuff. So I'm all ears. Ken, go ahead. Oh, you may be muted again. There you go.
No. I'm sorry, Mike. It just takes a second to unmute. My only concern is this, where you're indicating, first of all, I'd like to know how many more calls we have, because we really, all we've done at this point in time is accumulate a list. And we really haven't had what I would call a good spirited discussion. And I'm just kind of concerned that we really don't have a chance to flush all of this out. So I don't want to include something in a report that hasn't really been thoroughly vetted by the members of the group. That's my concern, Mike.
Yeah, well, and that's part of the reason I'm raising this is because 2 weeks from where we are strikes me as pretty aggressive. And we specialize in aggressive timelines around here, but I wanted to see how willing you all were to flog yourself through something like that, because I think we would have to work pretty hard to get there. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I guess this is a question maybe for Ken or, you know, for the rest of the group is, What would be the expectations of maybe of it being vetted by the group or what it would be? Because as of now, I mean, I think it would be the list of harms would be a list saying these are harms or other ones that were put together as what, you know, this group sees as potential harms. I mean, we're not going to be able to flush anything out and say this will definitely be one, this will not.
because we can't know that. This is what we could say. This is a list of potential harms. I mean, if people in the group say, hey, I don't see this as a harm, and say, you know, these are the reasons why I don't see it, I mean, we could put that into that report and say, you know, X, this person or this group or whatever says, we don't believe because of this or, you know, or other things. But I think that to say, to figure out and say, this is definitely going to be a harm and this will not, I think that's almost impossible. I think that's why I want to have it as potential, put that word and make sure to be in there, list of harms. I don't know what we would do as a group if we worked really hard. What is it that we would have to vet or go through to make it that everyone would be happy putting that list into the revised report?
Mike, can I respond?
Sure. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah. I understand your concern, Jeff. Let me start up by saying, Mike, please remember, and I'm not trying to sound America-centric on this, but we have a very large end of the summer holiday coming up on a Monday in one of these next two Mondays, Mike. And I'm afraid that may be reflected in reduced participation. I guess, Jeff, what I would say is at this point in time, the discussion and the stuff that's been put out so far are people's perception of what could be harms. But they only represent, in some cases, just an individual's someone proffering what they feel. And I think in order for that list to have some real legitimacy, we really have to be able to offer either precedents that we could show where this has happened in the past, or we need to take it one step further, and that is if we're going to create an awareness of potential harms going either way, we need to be able to support the, I'll call them allegations, and I don't mean anything tainted by that word. We need to support that in one way or another. Otherwise, you might as well send up the list that, you know, if we have vertical integration or don't have it, we could end up with increased global warming. You know, I know that's a stupid thing to say, but I'm just trying to add some legitimacy to anything more that goes into the report. That's all.
Thanks, Ken. I'm of two minds. There's been a pretty lively discussion in the chat. I'm always keen to meet the requests of people who ask for stuff. But in this particular case, the harms document seems so at the core of what we're about that I'm a little edgy about moving forward with it. It's sort of like when I used to be in sales, I was often very reluctant to quote any numbers because I knew that the first number I said out loud would be the one that everybody would remember forever, even if it turned out the number was way wrong. In a way, this initial list of harms is the one that's going to get heard and probably remembered forever. And I'm not sure that we can do it justice in the time we've got, especially given the holiday seasons. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, part of this, I think, I won't call it chicken or the egg because I guess it would be more cause and effect. I mean, I think that what we've had is we have a list of proposals in this report and what people put together, and they said, here's my proposal, this is what, what my group or whatever is proposing going forward, and a lot of them were, we want to do this because we believe it will mitigate the harms. Were a lot of statements in there. But then how is it that everyone, that if people are saying we're putting this proposal because to mitigate harms, but then if we can't say here are the harms that we want to mitigate, it's just it doesn't make sense to me that we have a problem putting together a document on what those harms would be if everyone has proposals to protect against these harms. So if they're non-existent, then what are the proposals there for? I'm just, you know, they're there. I think people have them, but for some reason they don't want to include them, or else they would not have put in their proposals, I want to protect against these harms or these harms happening to registrants. What are they if, you know, if you came up with this proposal and you put it on paper and you sign your name to it, then there would be an assumption that there is something specific you're worried about. Why not put that out there? Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, I think the tricky bit is, I mean, one approach, and it's flying by pretty fast on the chat, would be to do a better job of what I started to do long ago with that starter kit, where basically we just compile a list of every harm that everybody has described and put them in a list with no commentary on potential probability, likelihood, effect, anything like that. You know, that's sort of one extreme. And then we could put a giant disclaimer in front of that that says, this is simply a compiled list of all the harms. I think as soon as we start to evaluate the harms, we're basically heading back into the exact same conversation that we had with the proposals. And that's what I think is essentially very difficult to do in 2 weeks. I think it would be much more feasible to put together a total list of every harm that's possibly been imagined. But then at that point, I'm not sure that it's any use to anybody. Ken, is your hand up from before, or Volker? Go ahead.
My hand's up now.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, let me respond to just a little bit to what Jeff said and elaborate on what you said, Mike. I'd like to remind that this is an interim report. The harms are a critical part of this process and what we're all about. And concern about harms and compliance and so forth has been a material issue in the working group. And I think we owe it to the community to turn out a product there that is not, I won't use the word haphazardly, but is not as deliberative as it could be. So my feeling is that what we need to do, the board's retreat is not the end of the line. The board isn't retreating and the DAG coming out the day that they get off the retreat. I think that there may very well come from the retreat, and Roberto might be able to elaborate on this better than I could, a request from the board for elaboration in certain areas. You know, I don't think the retreat's going to be a final decision of the board, and that's one of the reasons I don't think they make resolutions at retreats. So I think we have time to do the harms justice, and I guess it's just a matter of priorities. Is it that essential that it get included in this document, or is it necessary that it be included in the report at a time where we can prove that we've really deliberated over these? Thanks.
Thanks, Ken. Volker, go ahead.
Yes, I mean, I completely agree with Ken. As it is, the list is just a list of harms that we've compiled without any consideration going into it. There's a lot of harms that many people will violently disagree with, and if we put it in like it is, it will just be instrumentalized to support any argument you could make by any group for or against any form of vertical integration. We need to discuss this in detail on the list. That is the reason why we started compiling this list in the first place, so we finally have something to talk about. But before we've talked about it, this is worthless. This is just a starting point for our discussion, and not something we should release as part of any report, because that will serve no purpose and will just be misinterpreted and instrumentalized.
Thanks, Volker. Amadeo.
Okay, what I do think we need to do with the harms list, whether for next week, next board retreat or next iteration of ICANN is for each harm, each party say, you know, three things. The first thing is, do you think this is relevant to some point? The second is, do you think which sort of measures from all those being proposed do you think that address this harm or could correct this harm? And the third one is, which kind of proposals or measures being proposed do you think that does not address this harm?
Yeah, and see that
probably we need to we need to do that first individually and then see whether collectively this amounts to some sort of consensus or trend or anything.
Yeah, and that's really what I was getting at, Amadeo, when I said this is so at the core of what we're doing. I'm gonna sort of summarize this conversation and say that although some folks are putting a little pressure on me and Roberto to come up with this list, I think we're going to graciously decline that opportunity. I'm really reluctant to go out with a list assembled this fast at the end of the summer with as little conversation as we're going to have a chance to give it because of all the points that you raised. So I appreciate the conversation, and I think at that point I'm going to wrap up the call. It's 29 after the hour. Is there anything that remains on people's minds that they want to say before I cut us off?
Oh, Mike, I have a lot of things about holidays and vacation, but probably it's not the adequate venue.
Well, yeah, that's true. We're not going there. And I will be on the call no matter what, because every day is a Saturday for me. Yeah. Now, somebody else is trying to... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, it's Jeff. Back out. Sorry, quickly. Oh, next, because I saw Anthony sent an email to the group about the call. Just to make sure, confirm, next, we're on the same time, same date is the next call, correct, next week?
Yeah. Yeah, we're on Monday at 1700 UTC indefinitely.
Great. Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah.
What holiday is it?
Oh, we have Labor Day coming up.
Oh.
That's the holiday. But see, you're just
no,
like me, Aubrey. Every day is a Saturday.
That's Sunday for me.
Okay, with that, thanks all. Have a great week. We'll see you in a week. And by then, our initial report will be over the transom. Thanks again.
Thanks, Mikey. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.